back to our little drama. That's what koans are. Just little dramas.
And so the monk asked, if the universe is pure and shows its true form, how is it possible for it to manifest mountains, rivers, and the earth? This how is it possible means, I don't see how it's possible. I don't see how they can all come out of that pure universe I have heard about. Well, we know that there's sort of a second part of the plot, like a character who's still off stage. We live on this earth. We know there are mountains and rivers, and earth and trees and grasses and walls and fences. There are people and ticks and bobcats. There are birth and death. Of course there are. So how to resolve the story. So stuck is there's chapter one and chapter two where it's like when I was in school I studied a restoration farce called Box and Cox, and the landlady rented one room to someone who worked nights and someone who worked days. One was Box, one was Cox, and farce consisted of trying to keep them apart so that each one thought he was the only one renting the room. And this is kind of like that. We have a room in which we either have a pure, undivided universe, or we have a room full of us. So somehow they are together. And the question is, what do we mean by that? How is that? What does it mean to say that a pure and original reality manifests as particular individual things? How can something become what it isn't? This how is it possible implies that no, it can't be. And that's one of the classic descriptions of the koan, is that the master is affirming can't be. Well, that's somebody else's opinion. Well, that's not the most interesting one. So our ordinary dualistic point of view says it's impossible for a pure, undivided universe to take shape as dirt, as you, as any limited thing. That they're different orders of being. This, how can it be? Which as we say all the time, how can it be that I'm going to die? How can it be that someone I love has died? How can it be? How can something I really can't understand, how can that be? Because our experience is what we go by, orient by, and it's not within our experience. How can it be? How can it be as the Grand Canyon of the dualistic mind? The two opposing sides. There's the one pure universe over here, and there's the all these things over there. And we say, no, it's one Grand Canyon. And we say, no, it's rims and depths, rims here, depths there. Well, it's actually neither, not sort of one or the other. Well, the Grand Canyon is all slopes and rocks and plants. Even the rim sort of disappears as a rim once you get up really close. The one time I was there, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I got a terrible cold, so I couldn't do a whole lot. But I wanted to wanted to walk down into it. So I set out on one of these trails. And so the Grand Canyon itself is turning to gravel and slithering away under your feet, and there's nothing but drop-off. So that's, you're on the rim. But you take another step. The rim, there isn't one thing that's the rim. It moves and it undulates and it's higher and it's lower. And you're, I went around and around and around. I'm scared of heights, and so I kind of crept around corners. And I was still on, I guess, was I still on the rim? Well, there isn't any one thing that's the rim, except maybe in our minds. It's slopes and rocks and plants and scree. And what seems to us like an unbridgeable chasm, you watch a bird, it just flies right across, right through it. It's not shaped to our bodies, and so we call it by names like a great chasm. We can't get our minds around something that doesn't, we can't map onto our bodies. It's so alien that people actually stand on the edge at some spot for pictures and take a step backward and fall in. We don't know how to relate to it. Our poor minds get befuddled. But we do know that there is something that is mountains and rivers. We don't have to say, oh, this is all a delusion or illusion or something. There are mountains, there are rivers, and there are those beautiful grasses and wonderful live oaks up on the hillside. The pure, undivided universe always produces earthworms and grasses. That's what it does. The whole worry of the koan is, in a sense, foolish. Because, yes, the universe is ceaselessly producing volcanoes. That's what it does. At the same time, we don't understand it. So that's where the koan says, we don't really understand how this can be. How can birth and death happen? But I think everyone here has practiced long and hard and is very well aware, though our minds trick us again and again, aware that to create an alternate universe of purity or bliss, a cloud nine, is a dead end. Oh, we don't really do that. No, we just want enlightenment. It's the same thing. Some pure universe called enlightened life. And the world of the koans falls into that trap a lot. The idea of a cloud nine goal state called enlightenment. The enlightened universe is constantly producing confused beings like us, and earthworms and grasses and trees and mountains and rivers. That's what it does. It's an energetic universe. And we do much better to take it away from ideals, idealistic notions. If we don't want to be caught in the Grand Canyon of where we are lost and not knowing where we are, what's the top, what's a rim, what's a bottom, we can't get in and out of it. We need to not be caught in loose idealizing and loose generalizations. The ideals have to come down to earth and have particular features. Legs, wings with real feathers on them. And we can't afford to be caught in an idea of a mechanical view of the many phenomena, kind of denying life. We live in a mechanical way, all of us, a lot of the time. Whenever we're ruled by a clock, we're living a mechanical life. When we live, when we are driven by our laundry lists, we're living a kind of mechanical life, treating ourselves and each other like wind-up toys. But there is something, in a sense, large to orient by. There is a universe that manifests as mountains and rivers and the earth. It's an energetic universe. The universe is energy and matter, and energy is matter, and matter is energy, interacting. The universe is all the shapes that energy takes, because energy is always taking shape. How is it possible for this universe that shows its true nature to manifest mountains, rivers, and the earth? That's what it does. This is one universe. And this is so much, we who already live in a beautiful place, Sebastopol, Santa Rosa, Grayton, Cotati, go to an even need to move ourselves out of the ordinary, slightly mechanical world, busy life that we create. It's not only that, but that is a feature of it. And the entangled life that we have, we come to an even more spectacular place, a magnificent place, where we sort of can't avoid being moved by the magnificence. Whether you're happy or whether you're sad, you're in a magnificent place, and it moves you. It doesn't have to make you happy if you're sad, or sad if you're happy, but it moves us. And we can see a little more clearly that we're in one universe with all these forms. Here, they are all beautiful shapes. Every blade of grass looks beautiful to us. None of them, there's no harming. The deer and the fawns hanging around the women's building are so tame they hardly move out of your path when you walk by. There's no harming. They look at you with their big eyes, without terror. A little bit vigilant, maybe, but without terror. Here, we're not predators. So we come to this place where the one universe shows many, many, many specific, particular faces to us. It's one of those beautiful places to do this, where we can sit here inside and then we can go outside. It's not just the grasses. They remind us that there are many beautiful forms of the universe taking place here, indoors. And it's big enough to hold us with all our complications that we bring into it. It's such a strong presence, this environment we're in, that it reminds us of this, it's kind of a deep song, kind of. It reminds us that we're in a universe of infinitely many forms, infinitely many voices, always changing. Always changing. In a way that it's sort of safe for things to be changing. So our love changes often feels very unsafe, because we want things to be recognizable and not change, or not too much, or not the way we don't want. We come here, and at least for the time we're here, the level of the kinds of change are mostly easy for us to enter and meet. It's a very special kind of occasion, because change isn't always like that for us. It's So it's not that it's always, from our point of view, such a beneficent universe, but right now and here, this is a beneficent universe, showing us many things. And we see that changing is one of the qualities running throughout one and many. We don't, because usually we're a little bit, you know, on guard about change, and that makes it harder for us to see it. So here, changing runs through whatever we call one universe endlessly, and runs through all the manynesses throughout difference and sameness is change. What unites them is change. From the changing light outside to the changing motion of light on blades of grass to the changes of our bodies and the changes of our lives to the whole of birth and death. It's all change. We should all have such gentle schools to attend. Where we can sit in the middle of this magnificent land and say, yes, the pure universe manifests as mountains and grasses. And you know, it doesn't also exist somewhere else, outside of them. It doesn't have some other form. The universe doesn't exist anywhere else than in and as all these myriad things. It's easier to feel that way when the environment with all the many things are so beautiful. It's harder when all the many things are more clashing and painful. So let's take full sort of advantage of what we're offered, the gifts of being able to say, oh yes, this pure universe is manifesting as every leaf on every tree. Oh my God. Changing, changing. There's no need here for us to think of the universe having some other form. It's when our lives pinch badly, we really want there to be some other kind of universe other than the one we're inhabiting. Well, what we really need then is for circumstances to be different and our way of meeting them and the things happening to us. We don't really need another universe, but we do need things to be different from how they are, and we suffer. Here we don't need that. The pure universe that manifests as mountains and grasses and doesn't have any other kind of existence means that pure and complete and limited and material are completely synchronized, simultaneous, whether we know it, whether we don't. Well, the monk's question is his delusion, his question of how can it be? I don't think it can be. This is his question and his delusion. This is true of us generally. Our question, even a very good question, arises out of our confusion and our delusion. And the answer is there's no other way for it to be. The pure universe is the only one there is, and it's in this endless movement and combination. The universe is movement, and it is combination and interaction, and the energetic drive of this movement and combination happening. The universe is mountains and rivers without end. And reality isn't a pile of lifeless forms. It's all of life. It's not an abstraction either. It's us. It's very affirming. There are mountains, and they are alive, and they are walking, as Dogen said. They are moving constantly. And they are made of many lives, including ours. And we enter them and are part of them. And they enter us and are part of us. It's harder for us to see that, but we can feel it. Mountains are the universe happening. Grasses are the universe happening. We are the universe happening. This is no small thing. This is the Buddha Dharma dance. And we're all here. We can't see the whole at one time. That's what it means, really, to be a limited or partial being. That we're always in some particular vantage point. Well, that's a good thing. We have ground under our feet. But that also means, and we are here, but it also means that we don't see the whole. So now we see one universe, and now we see myriad beings, and now we see birth, and now we see death. We see one pure universe, or we see myriad beings, but we have to live it as both. When we see one, live it as both. When we see the other, live it as both. When we see a living being, to live in relation to that living being as the universe happening, as that living individual being. We can only do that when we're also living and aware of ourselves that way. Or not completely conscious necessarily, but there's a deeper kind of awareness where out of our experience. It's, our experience is not quite the same, you know, as our awareness. Our awareness moves around constantly. We're a little bit more aware, a little bit less aware of this, not aware of that. But our experience is larger and is always informing us. We live as one being, meeting many, experienced by meeting each thing as our life. Each one is our life. We're meeting all the I'm one meeting many, and each one of the many is my life. And we live as each of us is many, meeting one. How do we as examples or feeling like we're manyness, we're just myriad pile of characteristics and thoughts and qualities. That's when I'm many, there's a lot of me, there's a lot of things going on. How do I live meeting one? One of the ways we do that is what we call dropping off body, mind, and zazen. Most people don't find a way to live as many meeting one. It's mostly many to many. I like this about you and I don't like that about you. And this about me likes that about the other one. That's many meeting many. We learn in our practice lives and other places, our practice life is specifically about this, to know that this is that we are each expressing one universe. We are one. Or we speak of our original nature, so like the universe's original nature, they're not separate either. A sense of one is a sense of being coherent or being coming from deep inside. We have many different ways of experiencing, but there is some sense in which we come to know ourselves at times as I am this one meeting many different things, and how am I going to do that in a way that says I am one expression of the universe, one complete expression of the universe that is also many, many things, and I'm meeting many different things, and I want to relate them in to this one me by taking care of each one completely. When I take care of each particular thing completely, I'm taking care of it in its individualness as the precious universe. And taking that in. I'm not awake to this all the time. But our experience of that we have, our experience of aiming to take the best care of what we meet, moves us through this dance of taking care of meeting something that seems very particular and taking care of it as the universe, and that reminds me that I am like that too. We live and practice out of our whole experience, not just out of the current moment's awakeness, and that's a damn good thing, because the current moment's awakeness is usually kind of a iffy thing. Yesterday I fell in love with a blade of green grass sitting under the, are they cedar trees? There's one particular blade of green grass that went like this and waved. And I just sort of fell in love with it. And in some sense I felt it spoke to me. There was some kind of communion. Kind of particular one to particular one. Each being is constantly experiencing. We tend to be very aware of ourselves as experiencing beings. We want to rely on our experience. What else is there to rely on? Every being is constantly experiencing. Single-celled organisms are constantly experiencing. And more subtly than we think. Experiencing is what living things do, living beings do. And that's sort of one of the ways we can have some kind of communion. We are doing things more similar to earthworms than we like to think usually, but that means that then we can share something, like run away from the moles. Our experience is and experiencing is crucial. It's our way of testing and evaluating and trusting and learning. All of that is our experiencing. And it's also just being you. You being you, being life, savoring and refining your life. It happens partly directedly, and partly it just happens anyway. Experience is how you know anything. And experience for us, humans, is always kind of the result of our whole past life meeting some new information, insight, sensation, something coming in new that gets mapped against that. Our whole life is present in some way. That's the body of experience that meets new experience. And I think being skillful in our life is one of the things it's very much about is putting yourself in the path of good, fresh information to meet, to come in as to join your experience. If you put yourself in the path of a lot of cheap violence, that's experience that's coming in. And one of the most important kinds of experience coming in is honest friendships. We're so dependent on what's coming in around us. What's coming to us? That's what's coming to be in our life is all the new sensation, perception, intuition, feeling. You know, all those skandhas are not just heaps. They are how things are experienced. What is coming to be experienced? And there's we, our body of experience so far, meeting that. Where do we do this? Where do we put ourselves? What kinds of environments and situations? We need all the help we can get, which is why honest relationships, which is to say where there's honest feedback, are so important. And we make this mistake over and over of thinking that we know. That's kind of closing our experience off. And so we're forever having to crack that open. We practice to crack our shells open so the light can get in, so the breeze and aroma can penetrate, so that we can receive and respond. It's not something that happens, that cracking your shell open is not something that happens once or twice in your life when you have something you want to call or get certified as an enlightenment experience. What would a certified enlightenment experience be anyway? Actually, Japan, they do. In fact, in some traditions, becoming a teacher or something is supposed to be a certification of your enlightenment. I don't think you can certify it. But one of the apparently true, and it's got to be apocryphal, only apparently it's true stories, is in one of the very first summers at Tassajara, when Katagiri was still in part of San Francisco Zen Center with Suzuki Roshi. And they were up at Tassajara. Katagiri was there for the summer. And he had some huge enlightenment experience, which I heard about at another time in Massachusetts. He never talked about such things in Minnesota, ever, that I know. But over Massachusetts, where he kind of, stories wouldn't get back, he was away from home, he talked about this big enlightenment experience he had. And he described it as having that for a week, he said, for days, several days, everything was completely different and astonishing and astounding, and everything was completely different. And then after a few days, it was stinky Katagiri again, as he called it. But the other piece, and that was what I heard in Massachusetts. But from the other side, apparently, when Suzuki came up and they talked, he said, that's a real enlightenment experience, and sent to Japan and got him a certificate. A Satori certificate, which Katagiri then burned in the wood stove.
Use for toilet paper.
You could use it. I think it would probably be a little stiff. It wouldn't even be good for toilet paper. All it's good for is kindling. Our experience is much too wide and vivid and precious to be funneled or channeled into something like some kind of a certifiable anything. We get cracked open over and over again. We crack ourselves open, we crack each other open, the world, the sky, the green blade of grass cracks us open. That doesn't solve your life, but it is your life cracking open and something fresh comes in. And when we can spend some time with these trees. Now, they're more different from us than people are, but in a way, they're easier too. Sometimes easier to look at a tree lovingly than a person. And whether it's easier or harder, it's something that we can do here. So at the time when we can see that this particular tree in front of us, or blade of grass, is completely expressed in the universe as its own particular self. It's when you're reaching out to speak in a common language with something beyond you, another person, even there, it's hard to be really sure we have a common language, let alone with a tree or a bird or a bobcat. But when we reach out that way, and they talk to us, and this you receiving and reaching out is equally the universe with this lovely thing we see. And the feeling of it is very satisfying. And it joins, becomes part of our experience. It's our experience then expands a little bit. We feel a little expanded. We are a little expanded. Our world has expanded. What we are has expanded to include a little more. And the way we, the kinds of experiences that we're having in these few days, these several days here together, expand the way we know ourselves together with each other in this group. There's a little glint. There'll be a little bit of farce stuff on Loretta's shoulder, invisible, but it'll still be there. And I'll remember that. I'll recognize that. We'll see the bobcat in each other's eyes in some way. We will remember this time of being able to be present in the landscape and be present with each other. I love sitting outside and not only being out there, but I've recently started to really groove on sitting, watching all these little mushrooms out there. All these wonderful individual mushrooms out there. Each one settling and experiencing life. And we don't say, oh, tree, how are you, universe? It happens on a deeper, more personal level. But the time when we use these words here or in Dokusan or to each other or reading or thinking about them is in us as our experience when we have the real and different and direct kind of experience with another being. Mountains and rivers without end. Thank you very much.